from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Happy Friday out there. We're heading into Labor Day weekend. August 30th, 2024 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at @Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That'd be Connor Dunning on X at @C929. Connor, how's it going?
What's up, man? Happy birthday, Cat.
Happy birthday to Cat. How about that?
And Meredith. Twins.
Cat's a twin?
Cat is a twin.
I learn something new every day. Learn something new every day. Now, we have 2 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to pass you off to Cardinals on the road against the Yankees at about 6 o'clock. And by the way, scary hours for the St. Louis Cardinals. Did you see sort of the news story this past week when they're playing the Padres, by the way? Padres 16 games over 500, and that's their former manager, Mike Schilt, who won them 20 games in a row, got them into the playoffs when it looked like it was dead a few years back before they turned to Ollie Marmol as the manager, and it has not been the same. So he put a whooping on them first two games of the series. But did you see what happened as far as the, attendance lows are concerned, Connor? They're 67-67 now. They won the last two games of the series. 13,000 people in the stands. I'm from St. Louis. That doesn't happen. Hopefully the DeWitts understand what is happening. You have to hit them in the pockets. That's what you have to do to owners, right? You have to hit them in the pockets to make them realize that they have to start spending money. And then the Padres on the other side, Mike Schilt, they're actually spending money. But again, regardless, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN at 6 o'clock, we'll pass you off to Cardinals versus Yankees. We have plenty to get to. We'll open on Colorado, talk about the experience from last night. Just happy to see football back. But Colorado escaped. They escaped. My three words yesterday, Connor, what were they? Don't mess around. They messed around. They messed around, but they got the win 31-26. We'll get some picks later with Lee Sterling around 5:30. David Cobb will join at 5 o'clock. We'll have some NFL at some point as well. Talk about Brandon Ayuk and the massive deal he signed. We still are waiting on Ja'Marr Chase to sign. And then an interesting story has been brought to my attention. I texted Jake Elliott about this as well. Still awaiting a response. I didn't text. It took me a while to sort of get to this story.
Did you tell him that I drafted him?
Did you?
Yes.
Okay, nice. He's usually my kicker, but I think somebody took. I got Justin Tucker this year.
I took him, Gabe. I just said it.
I know. I got Justin Tucker this year.
It sounded like you were about to. Somebody took him.
You took him before me. I ended up getting.
I had to take him early. I had a tough turn.
92.9 league looks like going to be competitive this year.
Should be.
Bennett Doyle though. I don't know about
Bennett
his
is loyal
team,
to
buddy.
His Titans, and I stand
He's
by
got
it.
Like four Titans on his bench.
And Derrick Henry.
It's absolutely unbelievable. But if you have not
Good
been paying
Bennett.
Attention to the Sao Paulo treatment and what's going on in Sao Paulo, they're going to have a Friday night game. It'll be Eagles versus Packers. They're already there. Apparently, the color green is not something you're supposed to wear in Sao Paulo. I'll explain why. But think about the teams that are there. The Eagles, green. The Packers, very green. Green is in their name, Green Bay Packers.
Yes.
And then also, I was hearing sort of Josh Jacobs talk about it, the newly acquired running back for the Green Bay Packers. And he was on a podcast discussing how excited he was for this trip to start the year. First time in Sao Paulo, take the NFL over there on a Friday night. Should be really cool. And he was thinking, okay, I'm going to get out on the town, do some touristy things. Apparently the teams and the team personnel has said don't leave the hotel, if at all possible. Don't leave with your phone either. Don't bring your phone outside. So the Sao Paulo experience, a little less than desirable. We can say that. Now, Colorado gets over top of North Dakota State 31-26 last night. I think one of my biggest takeaways from last night, Mark Jones, play-by-play announcer, was in midseason form. Boss man D-Lo references after the first touchdown that Travis Hunter had from about 41 yards out. Pockets full of cheese, fresher than Febreze. Phenomenal. It's phenomenal stuff. I didn't understand why everybody seemed to sort of hate the Mark Jones experience last night. Did you see some of that, Connor?
I did. I enjoy it.
I enjoy it. I think it's one of two. There's two things, right? One, you either think that there's a Colorado slant. I didn't view it that way, personally. I think it's pretty exciting, the plays that Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter make. So, generally, any play-by-play announcer is probably going to be more excited when they make a play.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really view it that way. The second part of it is, I guess, the pop culture references. Maybe that wears thin on people. But at the same time, I enjoy it. Like, that's part.
That's kind of my whole thing. So I want
I want some fresh content for my play-by-play announcer. And Mark Jones, to me, one of the best doing it right now. I know there's people out there listening to my voice that disagree with every utterance out of my mouth right now. But I thought that was a well-called game.
So what I would say is that there sometimes you need the classic sound of college football. I get it. Like there are some games where it is that is necessary. For a game last night, North Dakota State versus Colorado, first game, first big game of the year, exciting. You got big right. personalities. Go for it. Like have fun with it. I enjoyed the experience.
I enjoyed
the experience. I mean, we got a John Morant reference in there too.
Yeah, our guy Jeffrey Wright, not a fan. I saw his tweet. I saw him all over the social media last night. Not a big fan of the Mark Jones experience. He wasn't the only one though. I'm not calling him out. As just a singular person that was hating on Mark Jones last night. There was a lot of people going after Mark Jones, and I didn't. I honestly thought it was a well called game.
I enjoyed it.
It was a great broadcast. That's my take. Now, getting to Colorado, their defense is still very suspect. And it's kind of funny to me, after last year, you thought there'd be sort of sweeping changes on that side of the ball. And you thought they'd get bigger in the trenches. And you thought they'd be a better pass rushing team. And you thought their linebackers would be bigger. I don't know if you watched and saw North Dakota State's offensive line versus Colorado's defensive line. But I was questioning as soon as the game started who was the actual FBS team. Colorado is tiny on that side of the ball. I don't know if they're trying to be finesse. I don't know what their effort is on that side. But North Dakota State, I understand they have guys, like most of their offensive linemen don't play until they're like redshirt juniors. Like they get them big and massive and feed the, you know, get them all corn-fed, get them all huge. But at the same time, I was questioning who's the FBS team and who's the FCS team. It was the other way around last night. But that defense, the linebackers got cooked early in that game. There's a little angle route on the first drive of the game that Cam Miller gave to his running back that went for about 50 yards. They couldn't get off the field on third down in the entire first half. Just could not do it because the pass rush wouldn't land. Cam Miller would get out of the pocket, go find somebody, convert a third down. But that defense is still bad. And I think, obviously, we're going to have to see what they look like against Nebraska on the road next week. Dylan Raiola, the starting quarterback for Nebraska, 5-star last year's class. But they're 7-point dogs, and I think we'll get a good look at it. It to me, just watching them yesterday, last night, I think that is a worse group than it was a year ago. I truly believe that. Shedeur, everybody was going after the fake cramp. I gamesmanship. Nothing wrong with that to me. I mean, I get annoyed with it because it looked like they had the quick turnaround because Colorado didn't convert the 4th-and-1. North Dakota State's offense was on the field. Colorado was not ready to bring their defense out, so Shedeur faked a cramp so his defense had time to get out. Good gamesmanship, but I always have wanted that to be penalized in the past. They have not found a rule to be able to penalize that. And then the most – egregious, ridiculous, arrogant play of the game. Colorado is up 31-26. Last drive of the game for them. What in God's name are they doing throwing a vert on first down up by five with a minute 34 on the clock and North Dakota State has one timeout left? What are you doing? Now, what we learned about it is that Shedeur Sanders was given a play by his OC, Pat Shurmur, a run play. Shedeur Sanders checked out of it to throw a vert down the sideline to Jimmy Horn. That is a ridiculous level of arrogance. Sure, I think we should aspire to be that arrogant and believe in ourselves, sure. But you gave North Dakota State a chance. I don't know if you saw it at the end. They caught the Hail Mary. Cam Miller just didn't have the arm strength. They were 5 yards short. If they're 5 yards pushed up, same play, they win that ball game because you gave them an opportunity by throwing a vert on a audible play on first down. It continues to show me that undisciplined sort of team from a year ago with the personal fouls and holding calls and, you know, doing things like it's still there. And Coach Prime has to get a hold on that. And I think he needs to check his son immediately on that ridiculous audible that he made at the end of that game. Also, this is just going to be something we have to monitor throughout the early part of the season. The clock issues need fixing. They just do. When North Dakota State was trying to come down to get set up for the Hail Mary, this could have gotten them 5 yards closer. The clock rolled 3 seconds before the spike, before the ball was set. I don't know if that was some home cooking. I don't know if it was just an egregious mistake by whoever was running the clock, but that needs to be fixed. And then a sidebar on that final drive, ridiculous mistargeting call by Colton Hood, who was Colorado's DB. Just direct hit North Dakota State's receiver directly in the head, led with the crown of his helmet. Now to a couple of truths about this Colorado team. First question that I have. What's different about this team? Can someone tell me? Can someone honestly give me a real, honest look at what has changed about the Colorado football team? They have a couple of other skill players, but they weren't bad at the skill positions last year. They had Xavier Weaver and Jimmy Horn and Travis Hunter. Now they have Travis Hunter and Will Shepard and LaJonte Wester, and Jimmy Horn's still there, and he had a hell of a night. 7 catches for 198 yards and a TD. But what's different about this team? O-line's still bad. They can't run the ball. Dallin Hayden, shout out to him. I think he should be their lead back, but he was their leading rusher with 9 carries for 20 yards. Their defensive line, still unbelievably suspect. Their linebackers, still unbelievably suspect. They can't play a zone defense to save their life. They don't play zone defense. I don't know if that's a Deion Sanders thing and he's being on brand because he's one of the best corners of all time and he's saying, you guys should be able to do it. Play man. But they play one high safety with Shiloh Sanders and just put everybody else in man and they get cooked inevitably. I don't understand what is different about this team. There's nothing. You have your superstars in Shedeur and Travis Hunter. Then around to that, it's a lot of blah. And the same issues that they had a year ago were perpetuated last night against an FCS opponent. And an FCS opponent, I might add, yeah, they've won 16 national championships, but they have a new coach this year. They're not the same team that they've been in the past. They have not won a national championship in a few years now. There are some teams at the FCS level that have passed them up in those power rankings. Montana State, South Dakota State. So that is not the same North Dakota State team we've seen in the past go beat Iowa and beat teams like that going on the road for those bye games. So you got an easier North Dakota State, and you just looked exactly the same that you did a year ago. Now, my second question, or I guess truth, Travis Hunter was phenomenal. Like, I hear people saying some ridiculous things today, just to be honest, saying, oh, well, he could win the Heisman even though they have a losing record. I just don't think that's going to happen in this day and age. I think Paul Hornung is the only person to ever win a Heisman on a losing team. That was Notre Dame, 2-8. And that was a long time ago. I don't know if we can sort of copy and paste. I understand Travis Hunter does everything, but at the same time, there's going to be a lot of guys on really good teams that put up good numbers, and I think that will go over top of Travis Hunter. And also, I think when it comes to that Colorado team, if you're talking about a Heisman, you would sort of have that Heisman split. right? Shedeur Sanders is unbelievable. Travis Hunter, unbelievable. I think you would sort of split votes there. But Prime clearly still hasn't found a way to balance both sides of the ball for Travis Hunter. Seven receptions, 132 receiving yards, three receiving TDs, two tackles. He played 129 of 131 snaps. I've got to be honest with you. I think Coach Prime is doing him a disservice. And the reason I say that is because at the NFL level, you're not going to be able to do that. If you're going to go both ways and play offense and defense, you'll be used in special situations on one side of the ball and play mostly on the other side of the ball. We don't see slashers that are able to play both sides of the ball at the NFL level. Way too physical, way too rough and tumble. Your body will break down immediately. And I think what we're seeing now from Prime is he is leaving the door open for Travis Hunter's body to break down before he even gets to the National Football League. North Dakota State was last night. It's not the toughest opponent on your schedule. You're going to have a long Big 12 schedule. I think you have five ranked opponents you're going to have to play by the end of the year. If you're playing him for 129 snaps a game, I'm telling you right now, some type of soft tissue injury, maybe even a big injury, will hit Travis Hunter. I'm not hoping for that by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not even trying to put that in the air. But at the same time, bodies will break down and deteriorate if they have to play that many snaps every single game. And what I would tell Prime right now, this isn't high school. You can't do that consistently against good competition and expect good results. I think what would be better for Travis Hunter for the NFL, and I understand Coach Prime's got to go win games, so he's got to put his best player on the field whenever he can. But what would be best for Travis Hunter is to focus on one side of the ball, but still balance out the other side of the ball. You can play him for a certain amount of snaps, but sometimes you have to give him series off just to let him recover a tad bit. No human body can take that type of a beating and consistently stay on the field.
Which side of the football would you prioritize?
After last night, it's hard to say defense, right?
That's what I was going to say. The biggest thing I took away from the game was, this is a really one-dimensional team.
Yes.
Very one-dimensional. They can throw the football, but they got pushed around in the trenches in a way that I was not expecting. They gave up 157 rush yards and only got 59 themselves. That was the big surprise to me, because it seemed like they had a bit of a focus at least on, we know that the trenches need to get better, and to your point, they kind of look like they were worse than last year. Now, it might just be the first game and they might get it together, but because of the opponent, it certainly raised some question marks, and I am under the opinion, I don't think it's a hot take by any means, they lose that game unless Travis Hunter's on the field. He's the reason 100%. They won that game. Those two catches he had were insane.
I will say, the third one...
Crazy.
I can't even fathom
incredible
how he brought that in. And there was one that Shedeur threw that got the pass interference call, and he basically dropped back, free release. He's like, I'm throwing it to you anyway. Then he gave him crap on the sideline about not catching it. And Travis Hunter said, throw it to me again. See what happens. And it wasn't even a well-placed ball. Can I add that? He threw it right at the defender.
Oh, yeah.
And Travis Hunter somehow wiggled his right hand in there, got his left hand on it, brought it in. Unreal catch. But when we talk about where to skew his time on that Colorado team, or once he gets to the NFL, what position is he going to play? I mean, he's great on both sides of the ball. But looking at him last night, his ability to get open, his contested catch ability, just his hands in general. He had 9 targets. He caught 7 of them. He's great with the run after catch. I thought originally with him coming into college, we would skew this thing toward DB and he'd be a DB because he's really good as a cover corner. Might be one of the best cover corners in college football this year. Trailing a few guys, but one of the best. When it comes to the wide receiver position, it's always in need. And I think that's where I think he fits in the best. I think he is one of the best wide receivers in the country. Probably top 2, top 3. When we talk about the corner position, probably top 10. I think he's better at wide receiver than he is at corner. And that's I'm surprised I have that take at this particular moment, because I thought coming into college would be the other way around.
I think just specifically for this team, he has got to be out there playing wide receiver, because they just don't have as many offensive weapons
because their trenches aren't very good. They don't have much time. Like, that's the thing that I noticed last night.
Well, they have weapons on the outside.
They have weapons, but they don't have time.
But you need as many good weapons on that side of the ball as possible, because you're going to have to outscore people because your defense is a
no-show. You kind of need a bailout.
Yes.
And Travis Hunter can kind of be a bailout for you on the offensive side of the football.
Yep.
Shador is very good. He is really good. He made some plays last night. He extended some plays. He was having to run for his life a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by they just don't have much time, man. It's like that ball snaps, and within 2 seconds, he has to let go of the football.
There's two things about Shador Sanders that put me in this. I really think he's the best quarterback in the 2025 NFL draft. Like, I think he's the best prospect. And we can see what Carson Beck does this year. But what Shador Sanders has done behind indefensibly bad offensive line is unreal. But his ability to extend plays, great. I wouldn't say he has, like, that deep ball, you know, that you would normally think. He can't uncork at 80 yards, in other words. But good Lord, in those intermediate spots, the accuracy and the zip that he puts on the... He can throw it from the left hash all the way to the right sideline, and it's there in a snap of a finger. It is unreal the amount of zip he has on those intermediate routes.
And he's got really good chemistry with his receivers. They understand that ball is going to be coming fast.
And the other
I've noticed that they'll stop running because they know that he's going to hit them so fast that they don't have to keep running.
The other thing that I think he has... over Carson Beck in a really substantial way. Carson Beck, if you watch him, and he doesn't get pressured a lot because it's a Georgia offensive line we're talking about, but when he gets pressure in his face, that ball tends to start spraying in different directions. He's a little uncomfortable. Shador Sanders, this is a bad thing in my opinion for his you know development going forward, because he could get happy feet at some point if he keeps getting hit the way he's getting hit. But because he's played behind that Colorado offensive line, he has learned how to throw while getting absolutely mashed in the mouth. That throw over the middle to Jimmy Horn that ultimately scored that long touchdown, stood in the pocket.
The 69-yard one?
Pocket collapsing on him. He gets hit on the arm even. It's a little wobbly ball, but right on the money across the middle, and Jimmy Horn's able to run that thing in for a touchdown. He is able to throw under pressure, unlike anybody in the country, in my opinion. That's one of his best qualities when you sort of look at it. So I'm very impressed with him. Now, final thing, and this is just kind of a PSA, and I put this out on my X account last night because I think it's pretty important. The Coach Prime in Colorado experience and discussion, it's the worst form of discussion. And the reason I say that, it's a discussion that sits on the polls, right? You either love him, you either hate him. You either are rooting on him to win, and no matter how they win, you're going to think they're the best thing since sliced bread, or you're rooting on them to lose, and you're going to discredit everything they do. I want to caution people to just sort of drop the emotion when it comes to the Colorado Coach Prime experience, because the talk about him, and you even see it on ESPN and people talking about it, there's just way too much emotion on either side. In the end of the day, this is a team that was 1-11 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He took it over, replaced the roster, won 4 games, now is 1-0. I talked about the resume yesterday. If you talked about a guy who was in the youth football ranks, who put a bunch of guys into Division I football, got them free rides, then went to high school and won 2 state championships, then went to Jackson State and won 2 conference championships, then went to Colorado and quadrupled their win total in year one, you'd say, if his name wasn't Deion Sanders, if his name was John Smith, you'd say, this guy is an up-and-coming great coach in college football. But because it's Deion Sanders, you just have this sort of give and take of people sort of making up ground for the people that hate him, and, you know, the people that hate him and continue to sort of push against are mad at the fact that people continue to latch on to it, even though it's a pretty mediocre football team. I think we can have nuanced discussions, but it does not seem like we're having that around Coach Prime or Colorado at this point.
No.
And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, but it's something that continues to bother me. I'll say that.
Based on last night, do you think this team makes it to a bowl?
Ooh. Oh, gosh. No. No. I think you're topping out at 5 wins with what they put out on the field last night. Now, here is the hope that they should have, at least for their offensive side of the ball. Their defense side of the ball, I don't know if there's much hope there.
You got to outscore people.
You're going to have to outscore people. But as far as the run game is concerned, there's two guys that there's a guy named Khalil Benson who started at right guard last night, and he started 24 games in Indiana. He needs to step into his own and start to understand what is expected of him in that Colorado offense. The other thing, if their left tackle, five-star, true freshman Jordan Seaton can start to come into his own, that O-line can be a whole lot better, and you might see actually drastic improvement as the season goes along. But with any true freshman, I watched him last night. A lot of are you familiar with the term paralysis by analysis?
Yes.
He was just uncomfortable, didn't really know what he was looking at most of the time. Whenever he had a sort of straight drive block or a straight pass protection against a DN, he won his battle. But whenever the North Dakota State started blitzing and twisting, he was just, his head was spinning. I think a couple of weeks worth of film for him, a couple more weeks worth of games and reps and practice, I think that will do a good service for him, and maybe that Colorado O-line can get better going forward. But based on what I saw last night and the lack of improvement at the positions they needed the most improvement at, I still think this is a 5-7, 4-8 team. In a new Big 12, you're playing five AP-ranked opponents, AP preseason top 25 teams. Sorry. I you want to make a bowl to show the work that you have done if you're Coach Prime, but that's going to be an uphill battle. And I've been saying that since the offseason. Been saying that. Now, we need to talk some NFL. Brandon Ayuk gets his big deal, 4 years, $120 million, $78 million guaranteed. I want to talk through how we actually landed at that number and sort of what was the back and forth and the trade discussions. There's a lot to discuss when it comes to Brandon Ayuk and how this deal ultimately got done with the San Francisco 49ers. That's next, 92.9 FM, ESPN. So before I hop into the NFL discussion, get to Brandon Ayuk and the big deal he got and the reasons it took so long, couple more things from last night in college football. North Carolina over Minnesota. That was nice. 19-17, North Carolina. They ended up getting over top. It was just a field goal fest in the second half. But Mac Brown puts on for the old folks. There we go. Good job, Mac. But Minnesota get a game-winning field goal from about 40-some-odd yards away. And it looked perfect right down the middle. And then tailed right, went wide right at the very end. So North Carolina ends up getting that win. But in the midst of getting that win, Max Johnson, who's now on his third school, A&M, LSU, and now North Carolina, he had to be taken off on a cart. And I am just gutted for that kid. Brad Johnson's son, Brad Johnson, former Super Bowl-winning quarterback, was at Florida State. That's where he went and played basketball there too. People, I mean, so some of the older folks in our audience definitely will remember that. Played in the Metro against the University of Memphis. Well, maybe Memphis State at that time. I'm not totally sure. But Max Johnson broke his right leg, and he underwent surgery in Minneapolis last night, and his family was alongside of him. That broke my heart. That broke my heart. A guy who finally sort of lands in a spot where he's going to be a consistent starter. He started some games at A&M and LSU, but he was never the consistent starter that they were leaning upon. I didn't think he had a good game last night by any stretch of the imagination, but for him to go out that way, and his, I believe, final year of eligibility, that is just as brutal as possible. Maybe he'll get some type of medical red shirt this year. I don't know what that'll look like. But you get gutted for a kid who has been trying to find his spot, finally lands in a spot where he's a starter. And game one, three quarters into the game, breaks his leg. Tough stuff. Tough stuff to watch.
Yeah, and I don't know if you were watching the broadcast, but the announcers broke it down very well because they started talking about how, from a parent's perspective, because he kept flashing the camera to his parents watching the game.
They're gutted over there.
They were absolutely
It was hard to watch,
gutted.
Brad.
It was quite emotional when you listened to the broadcast because it really was this is the third time now that he's tried to make it work, and it hasn't worked out for him, and it is very hard to watch. And it's one of those moments where you have to remember, yeah, we're watching, these kids, and they're playing for certain schools, and they are athletes, and we judge them based on performance, but it does humanize
yes.
the players every once in a while, because he was like, every single play when you're a quarterback's parent, you hear the crowd reacting. Like, everybody's focused on your kid. And then when, you know, you have to see him go down in front of everybody when he had so much hope for the season, it was just devastating. It made me teary-eyed.
Yeah, and then on some brighter notes, Utah beat Southern Utah. But Cam Rising, 10 for 16, 254, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Is that good? I think that's good. I don't know. I mean, I only talk about football. I'm not totally positive. That's great. No, it's great. Missouri looked really good over Murray State. I understand it's Murray State, but defensively they look phenomenal. Brady Cook, 218 in the TD. Luther Burden had a touchdown. They didn't really do all that much, you know, running the ball because they didn't have to. They had a bunch of short fields the entire night. Toriano Pride, who came over from Clemson as a cornerback, was phenomenal. Like, keep an eye on that kid. I know it was against Murray State, but he had a pick that led to, I think he had a pick six. And he's a former four or five star out of the city of St. Louis. But Toriano Pride is a cornerback you need to keep an eye on the entire year, because he is a absolute dog. Arkansas against Pine Bluff. Pine Bluff, there's not much to look forward to if you're a Pine Bluff fan. But Arkansas won 70-0, and Taylen Green looked okay. Jaquindon Jackson, the transfer from Utah, 8 carries, 101 yards, 2 TDs. And also, he's got some off-the-field game. Like, he has an on-field game. Did you see what he did after a touch? I think it was his second touchdown of the day. Ran it in from about 40 yards out, and then he waved to the Arkansas Pine Bluff cheerleaders.
Good for him.
He gave them a little attention. So, that's all I really have. I mean, as far as UCF, KJ Jefferson didn't look great. I was expecting it to look a lot better, but he didn't throw the ball very well. Kind of ugly. He had a couple of turnover-worthy plays, threw a pick, only 39 yards rushing. KJ Jefferson didn't look all that smooth, even though UCF beat New Hampshire 57-3, which you would expect. But now, on to the NFL. Brandon Ayuk gets his big deal. 4 years, $120 million, $78 million guaranteed. And this is an offseason where we were just waiting for this shoe to drop. We're just waiting forever and ever, and it got annoying. And honestly, I said it yesterday. I thought it was a lot of fuss made by Brandon Ayuk to ultimately sign with the team that he was so annoyed with, that he requested a trade from. It's rare that you see in the NFL, NHL, Major League Baseball, whatever it is, it's rare you see a trade request gone back on, but that's exactly what Brandon Ayuk did. But he had the public trade request. He talked to Jaden Daniels, his former quarterback at Arizona State, and basically said that the 49ers didn't want him. He denied multiple opportunities to be traded to teams that were going to pay him a whole bunch of money, and ultimately ends up with the 49ers. Now, what I did learn about this deal in particular, the 4 years, $120 million with $78 million guaranteed, this has been on the table since August 12th. So I will say good on the 49ers for not moving any higher than that number right there. Now, I would say getting to August 12th, taking that long to get to that $30 million when ultimately we're going to give in and get to that number, a little bit too long. It took you a little bit too long. But after August 12th, they just put an offer on the table and said, you either take this and come play in the playoffs with us, or we can trade you to the Cleveland Browns or the Patriots. You can make $32-plus million per year. And ultimately, the decision after that was easy. So, on face value yesterday, I didn't think the 49ers played this as well as they could have. I think they, you know, after seeing that they put this offer on the table, waited it out, Brandon Ayuk ultimately signs it, I think they played this about as well as they could have. Now, Diana Rossini did shed some light on the 49ers and, you know, what the conversations were behind the scenes once Brandon Ayuk gave the trade request. And he was very, very close to being traded to the Steelers, Connor. This is what Diana Rossini wrote. I believe she works for The Athletic now.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
She said the 49ers were only willing to trade Brandon Ayuk if they could get a top-flight wide receiver to replace him. They offered a third-round pick to Denver for Cortland Sutton. Then they would have dealt Ayuk to the Steelers. So Steelers fans out there are probably sad with me saying that. But the Broncos declined the offer, so that's why ultimately he ended up staying in San Francisco. I don't think Cortland Sutton and Brandon Ayuk's a one-for-one deal there for the 49ers, but it would have been decent to try to replace him with him. But a third-round pick for Cortland Sutton, the only really massive receiver or decent receiver that the Broncos had in a year where they have to get Bo Nix used to the starting job, that would have been a really tough move. You would have to, if you were the Broncos, get another receiver in return that could eat up a lot of targets for Bo Nix if you're getting rid of Cortland Sutton. I get why the Broncos said no to that ultimately and why this all played out the way it did.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think it probably played out the way it should have. And I said it yesterday, but it really does feel like the 49ers stuck to their guns and they won out here. I understand that they had to pay Brandon Ayuk a big sum of money, but at the end of the day, they basically told him, if you want more money, you can leave. But we know that you don't want to leave. And you can make this amount here, so it's here. Take it when you want. And it's just, I wonder why it took so long for Brandon Ayuk to decide, yeah, I'm going to come back. Because it seemed like we've known for a few weeks now what his options were, and it was just clear that the 49ers were the best option.
We did overreaction, not an overreaction, 3 weeks ago, I believe.
3 weeks ago.
And you asked me about C.D. Lamb. You asked me about Brandon Ayuk. And I said, C.D. Lamb, Cowboys, Brandon Ayuk, 49ers. That's how it's going to end up. We're way too late in the offseason, heading into the season, especially even at that point, to try to make all these trades and do all this on, you know, in the snap of a finger. It just didn't make any sense. But, yeah, I think the 49ers stuck to their guns this entire time, putting that offer out on August 12th. You could argue that that was a little too late to put that offer out there. But Brandon Ayuk clearly waited it out to try to drive up the price a little bit more. Make it a little bit of a bidding war. But the 49ers are not, they were not inclined to go any higher than $30 million. And I don't think they should be. He's getting paid the exact same amount as Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think that's similar production. That's what you should expect. Now, he's a little bit younger. Brandon Ayuk's, what, 24, 25 years old. So he's got some upward trajectory, and he's gotten better every year of his career. But he's not a guy that should be making, I mean, he makes the same as Tyreek Hill. He's not a guy that should be making the same as Tyreek Hill, but yet 49ers still forked over the money to pay him that type of money. So it ultimately worked out for both parties. Now, the Bengals and Ja'Marr Chase, that's the last wide receiver situation we're trying to figure out. Earlier this week, Bengals head coach Zach Taylor said that Ja'Marr Chase would be at practice, back at practice. And the next day, Ja'Marr Chase shows up 13 minutes late in street clothes and just walks around the indoor facility. So Zach Taylor had to step back on that and say, you know, I'm hopeful. Maybe I spoke a little bit too soon. Yeah, Zach, you definitely spoke a little bit too soon. But there is a report from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network about Ja'Marr Chase and the contract that he is seeking to get. Now, we know Justin Jefferson has the record for a non-quarterback in National Football League history when as it comes to a per-year valuation on a contract. He makes $35 million per year, highest-paid wide receiver of all time. Now, Ja'Marr Chase is going to be right around that and probably will supersede that. But the report from Ian Rappaport is that the Ja'Marr Chase talks continue and that he either wants to tie Justin Jefferson as the highest-paid wide receiver or, and I think this is the more likely thing, he wants one more cent than his former teammate at LSU. He wants one more cent. That is what Ian Rappaport is reporting. And it is kind of funny to think about how these contract talks and back and forths and negotiations are a lot less scientific than you think. It's a lot less of a formula and more about, hey, I want to make the most. I want to set a record. I want to be important. But I will say, when it comes to a wide receiver, I wouldn't want my wide receiver one acting any differently. I need that.
It's
I need
the diva. Receiver answer.
I need the prima
it's
donna.
A perfect answer.
All the best wide. I mean, Randy Moss, Chad Ocho, or Chad Johnson. At this point, you just keep going back in the history books. Obviously, Jerry Rice, not that, but all of these good wide receivers, you got some diva in you. That's fine. I can deal with that. Wouldn't want it any other way.
They should just go ahead and pay it. I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, that's a sicko answer. We got to give him that extra 1 cent. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, it won't be 1 cent. It would be like $100,000. That's how it usually works. But, hey, it is what it is.
That point one is actually
now, when it comes to getting the contract written out and signed, Bengals,
hurry up.
Do it.
Hurry up.
Get it done now. Without him, that AFC North is a little too tough. You need all hands on deck. And then it gets really scary. Even if they sign in the next couple of days, we're 7 days away. I mean, we're not long. It's not long till we're playing football. We're 9 days away from playing NFL football. Buddy, get that thing done right now. Right now. Nasty work. Nasty work by the Bengals. They've always been a cheap franchise. Shouldn't be surprising. Shouldn't be surprising.
I mean, you're not wrong.
But they're also not a cash-strapped franchise. They're a very poor franchise in the face of all the franchises around the NFL. Now, we're going to have a game on Friday next week. Packers versus Eagles. Eagles will be the pseudo-home team, but it's going to be in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And the Eagles announced today that they will wear white jerseys and black pants with a black helmet. Now, a lot of people would, you know, generally speaking, ask me why I'm telling you what their uniform combination is going to be. And I get that question, but I'm going to answer it for you. The uniform combination means something because of what the NFL, the Eagles, and the Packers have ran into since they've gotten to Sao Paulo. Some context for the Eagles' black and white jersey combination. Corinthians, the people's team of Sao Paulo, wears black and white. Their arch rival, Palmeiras, wears green. City laws, get this, city laws prevent fans from wearing green at Corinthians games to cut down on hooliganism, and black endears them to the home fans. I have texted Jake Elliott. I did get a response. Now, his response was a little bit different because there has been warnings from the NFL. If you're walking around town, which we don't even want you walking around town. If you walk around town, don't bring your phone. Strange thing. But they've been told not to wear green because it could put them in the line of fire. But Jake Elliott, I did get a response from him. He said, I think it's a little overblown, but I definitely don't want to test it because there was a league-wide shout to both of those teams. Hey, don't wear green. Don't leave the hotel if you don't have to. And if you do leave the hotel, don't bring your phone. This is kind of interesting by the NFL. You schedule a game in Sao Paulo knowing, in all likelihood, this was something you're going to run into, and you bring the Eagles, who wear green, and the Packers, who wear green. A little bit of pre-planning probably would have helped, right? I mean, this doesn't seem that complicated to avoid, but the NFL did not do a good job of avoiding it.
No, that was my first thought is, it's not like this is some new thing. It's been around for a while, it sounds like. If it's part of city law, it's probably been around for a while. Maybe look into it a bit before you send the two green teams to play. Dummies.
Yeah. But it's kind of funny. The Eagles choose the black and white combination, and they're like, yeah, Packers, you're going to wear your green and yellow, and everybody's going to be pissed off at you. I mean, I don't think the Packers are going to be the most they're not going to be a fan favorite.
Probably not. I would say no.
Yeah. Now, you've heard us talk a lot about FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Well, we have something a little different for you. Now through September 22nd, all FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get 3 weeks' worth of a free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Then with a YouTube TV base plan, you'll be able to watch every regular season Sunday afternoon out-of-market game. All you need is a Google account and a current form of payment, and then you can cancel anytime. Just visit FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. Again, G-A-B-E-K to download America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Tennessee. Full price of NFL Sunday Ticket will automatically be charged seasonally after free trial. No refunds. Terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. And if you have a gambling problem, call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Now it's time to preview week one, so let's go ahead. And the rest of week one, I should say, and maybe talk a little bit of Colorado. We'll bring on David Cobb from CBS Sports next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.